case.
Okay, so what intervention can be done when a parent sees his child going in that direction?
When other people see it.
Okay, so when other people see it, you have to first realize what you're standing up against. Every situation is composed of many, many factors. And you can't judge in a split second just because you see a problem. Meaning, so you're sitting in Beis Medrash and you see this 13-year-old who starts coming daily to study Kabbalah, and you realize, hey, this isn't good for the kid. What can I do to help? So the simple thought is, well, let me go talk to his father, explain it to him, and then everything will be okay, right? Usually it doesn't work that way. Usually it requires much more wisdom and siyata d'shmaya to actually be able to affect any change in anyone. In order to help a situation change, you have to have an understanding of the situation. More often than not, you don't have the factors necessary to affect any change. You have to understand what's happening in the relationship between the parents. How are the parents educating the kids? What else is going on at home? Maybe he has a brother that has issue A, B, C, or D, and this is his way of trying to rectify the situation. You have to try to understand the child, what's driving him emotionally. And you have to understand the parents. When you don't have those facts in front of you, so you're entering a delicate situation on the blind. And that's why in most instances, the only thing you could do is try to find out who's close to the situation, who is the father's rabbi, who's really close to them, a relative or someone else. And then you have to stop and think, how intelligent is that person? Very often you can try talking to someone and they're not going to take real responsibility, and then they're going to come and quote you and then they're going to botch up the situation worse than if nothing would have been done. So you have to again assess the situation and realize the severity of what's standing in front of you, and realize that you're standing at a you're standing before a situation which you have at least a 50-50 chance of doing harm. And until you can change the odds, you're gambling, and you don't gamble with doing other people harm. So unless you can get more information and find a way in which you can either talk to the parent, which is rare, or find the right person to talk to the parents in the right way, which is probably a more common thing, which is a little bit more, it's more probable you'll be able to do it. But until you could get the probability to 70-80% that you'll succeed something, you have to remember they have a 50% chance of doing serious harm. Right, and that's why asked for the formula. So I'm saying the first thing is to assess the situation, and the true assessment of the situation is that there are so many unknowns that you can't touch the situation with so many unknowns. All you see is one problem, but you don't understand the backdrop to that problem. If you don't have the backdrop, you can't touch it. You can't do anything. Even if you understood everything, that doesn't mean you're the right person to touch it, or that you know the right time to touch it. There are many, many factors involved with trying to help someone. The first one is assessing the situation. Then is the question, who should be the one to say it? Very often, people will ask me if I could do A or B or C, and I'll say, well, wait a second, shouldn't so-and-so do it? I'm not trying to get out of it. I'm just trying to think who is the best party to do it. Sometimes people will come to me with regard to other students, and I'll say, wait, which rabbi is he close to? Talk to him, let them see. Because a person always wants someone closer to him to be the one to do something. So you have to assess a lot of points, and then you have to assess, is there really above an 80% chance, let's say, that you'll get anywhere or that you won't do harm? And again, it depends on how much harm you might do. You know, in a situation where you're risking all of their shalom bias, maybe this has been a sore point between him and his wife, and you come in and you're the one that's putting the straw that'll break the camel back. So you can't risk that. Then you're harming the kid even more. I'm saying there are so many factors that even though you might see from the outside a situation, until you really know what's going inside, you have to really keep a distance and not say anything. You don't have a choice. It's sad, but you don't have a choice. If you're the one that's really close, or if it's your own child, so then the comments we made earlier were focused to when it's your kid. Not when it's someone else's kid.
So the follow-up question would be, these types of situations, rather than you have like two choices. You can push yourself closer to the family to try and get in a position where you can say something or find out who can say something, or you can draw away from the family. The safer thing is to defend yourself and draw away, correct?
It depends. If you're already close and it's just a matter of a little bit of work to find out who's really close and then bring it to their attention and just verify that they're responsible, that they won't do harm, and that's not so easy. So you can't always absolve yourself from that responsibility. But
unless you're one of the second tier people, a rav, uncle,
right, if you're an uncle or you're their rabbi, so sometimes you do have to try to intervene. And even then, you'll be surprised that more often than not, when a rabbi approaches a situation that didn't approach him, meaning when he tries to approach the situation, most people are not willing to hear. Even in a situation, and that's why there are rabbis who will not approach a situation unless it's drastic. You know, a person's abusing his kid, you have to enter the picture. But if it's a situation like this, where it's a chinuch question, more often than not, if they did not approach the rabbi, he's going to be working with his hands tied behind his back. I can tell you as a shadchan, you know, some of the girls I've called who gave me their information and wanted me to set them up, I had more than one girl who answered the phone, "Oh, it's you again?" You know what my answer is? "No, it's not. I'm sorry. I wish you all the best."
I don't understand.
You know, well, there's this stigma that if it's if a shadchan's calling me, then I must not be a very successful person because I need a shadchan to help me get a shidduch. I need a shadchan, a matchmaker, to help me get married. So one of those girls, I actually set her up with her husband, and they're happily married today.
Right.
Another one of those girls, I'm not going to call again, and her father has chased me numerous times over the last few years asking me to set up his daughter. And I, after the third time she answered the phone that way, I said, "That's it." And her father has asked me a month ago, 2 months ago, he came to me and said, "You know, my daughter's single, she's only getting older, why can't you set her up?" And I said, "She doesn't want to hear from me, you know, quite honestly. I'm not going to keep calling, she doesn't want
so
it, that's fine."
That side, yeah, we'll
say. Well, she called and gave me her information. You know, I respect that. I'm just saying, when you try to help someone who doesn't want your help, so then you're working with your hands tied behind your back, and sometimes you can't even get past the hello because they don't want to hear you. So I'm saying, don't assume that a rabbi can necessarily get anything done either.
Oh, no, I think that everybody in this situation, this is a special case that I think everybody in this situation is some way accepted it, whether they think it's good or they think it's bad. Everybody's allowing it to happen. It's like a train wreck.
But again, you're looking from the outside. It's a little hard to know.
No. So my buddy, his oldest kid, is friends with this kid.